This is Outside the Round with Matt Barile, a Rage Rowdy podcast.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Outside the Round with me, Matt Barile. Today, a very special guest, man who's been doing it a long time down in the great state of Texas. He's got a new record coming out, Barstool Therapy Session 1, new music video with our boy Uncle Laser. It's our man, John Wolf.
What's up? How you doing, brother? I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Dude, thanks for coming out here. It's a treat when you get to be in town because you're based down in Texas still, right?
Yeah. My wife and I live in New Braunfels, Texas. Technically the hill country, we love it down there. I've been coming to Nashville forever, there was a time I lived here briefly, but I'm a Texas guy, man. I'm down in the hills over there.
And I hear the hill country is one of the most beautiful spots. I've driven through it. So in a past life, I used to be on the road as a tour manager.
Okay.
So I've been through various parts of Texas. But I've heard like the hill country is one of the best spots to go to.
It is, man. It is. It is. There's a little different weather out there. It cools down a little bit more. And so we love it out there. And there's a lot of dudes that live in New Braunfels, though. You know, Wade Bowen's there. Parker McCollum's there. Randy Rogers is there. Cody Canada. It's kind of like a little miniature Nashville for Texas guys.
That's awesome.
So it's a great little town, and the rivers are awesome. I can be fly fishing in 15 minutes from my house.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome. How long have you been down there in New Braunfels?
We've been there almost 3 years. So Austin for a lot of years.
Yeah.
That was where my wife and I originally lived. And so Austin just kind of became a big ass city, man.
You know,
it's still Austin. Do you go to Austin very often?
Yeah, so I was down there a couple weeks ago. We helped out with a festival out in College Station, but we flew into Austin and did a night out down there. And I'd been down there previously, but they always say keep Austin weird.
Yeah.
And it's like if all of Nashville was East Nashville, it'd be Austin. You know, it's a different, and I'm sure it was different when you were cutting your teeth down there playing in those bars.
Yeah, for
back
sure.
In the day.
For sure, man. There's been, you know, I just went out a week or two ago and saw Jamie Johnson at Green Hall.
Oh, that had to be sick.
Oh my God. I mean, and Jamie's a buddy of mine but just so good, man. Just so good. And saw a lot of my buddies that, you know, John Michael Whitby plays for George Strait, and I've known John for 20 years. Back when he was with Asleep at the Wheel.
Wow.
And so when we all got started, it was, you know, and it's so weird to see each other. Now it's like we look at each other, the change in the music business, you know, it's like we look at each other both. It's like dudes that were in NOM together, you know, so you're like, I remember NOM, man, you know, back in the day. So, you know, when we were running around early on, and we were just talking about this the other day, like, the generations of country singers. So, you know, when I first started, Randy was, you know, was kicking around. Randy Rogers' band was fully going, but it was in their early years. Cheatham Street Warehouse, Kent Finley still owned, you know, Kent was still around, obviously. And, you know, there's Cheatham Street. You had every Thursday night, you had the members of the Ace and the Hole band playing Nephews on the Square in San Marcos. And George Strait, you know, was obviously like, at this massive level, but Hag was still touring and Ray Price was still touring. So you had this like older generation that was still at it. I remember going to see the Last of the Breed show in Austin at the Backyard. And this probably would have been 07, I don't know, 08. And it was Ray Price, Haggard, and Willie.
Yeah.
You know, backed by Sleep at the Wheel. You know, and like, and here we are, we're young guys. So, you know, you got Strait doing his thing. Aaron Watson's coming up. Randy Rogers is happening. You know, Cody Canada and the guys were killing it. Pat Green was kind of the king of Texas. And then, but his generation just below him, above him would be Robert Earl Keane, right?
Yeah.
So that's what was happening.
It's a wild lineage, man. It's it is different classes of like a college football program,
right?
Like coming up, man. And
yeah,
you came up at such an exciting time, and you've gotten to become an OG in such an exciting time.
I was always kind of the young guy, kind of trying to fit my way in there a little bit,
yeah.
You know, even. I feel that way now still, you know, when it's like that same kind of, you know, we just released a song with Randy Rogers, Tequila Cowboys.
Yeah.
And you know, Randy and I still look at Randy kind of like, you know, he's a legend, man. And so Randy's always kind of that older brother thing. We're pretty much the same age, but it feels that way, you know, just a sort of that seniority in the scene. And so it's just really cool looking back on those times. And just a lot of things have changed, you know. But still, that wasn't all that long ago, right?
No.
It's just things change really fast.
Times move faster now than they ever have.
Yeah.
And it's like coming out of that era was when the rock and roll world moved to Texas.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
You had guys like Coe
yep.
and Cody West and
yep.
Dexter and the Moonrocks now. And like
yep.
you have the rock guys, but you still have that traditional. Like I'm sure you remember when Cody Johnson was a bar band.
Dude, Cody and I.
Like Cody, you guys coming up around the same time.
Yeah, Cody and I have done a lot of shows together in his early part of his career and even up into I can't remember what year it was. It was pre-pandemic, so it must have been 18.
I always say BC before COVID.
Yeah, before COVID, right? You know, we did a show, and I can't remember. I think maybe Parker was on this show, man. It was probably 18, 19. We sold out the Bank of Oklahoma Center in Tulsa. You know, so I did a lot of shows with Cody over the years, and same thing, man. It's like you just see this progress of the genre in Texas, you know, continue to kind of have its own life, its own sort of traction. And you're right, the rock guys. I'm kind of left in the dust on some of the rock guys because I don't have that sort of I guess influence, you know what I mean? So you got to respect it. And you're like, wow, this is killer. These guys have this influence. But I wouldn't know what to do with a rock song. You know? But
that's okay because it's all Texas music.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all encompassing where if it comes out of Texas, the folks back home in the red dirt world are going to embrace it, man.
For sure. Yeah. It's impressive, man. And you know, I think about like the sort of the idea behind the Texas music scene is sort of being an outlaw or a maverick, right? So it really just means these guys carve their own path, you know, they do their own thing. And it's cool to see it where it has the avenue now to sort of gain that, you know, global and nationwide and global sort of attention.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Because you think, you know, you think about when people say Texas music, like in my mind, you know, I love, have you been out to Luckenbach before? So, you know, I think of like Luckenbach and, you know, Willie pulling up and maybe this never happened. I don't even in my mind. Right.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, Willie pulling up in an old pickup truck with a guitar and, you know, singing around the campfire at Luckenbach with, you know, Jerry Jeff Walker and of course Gary P. Nunn still doing it, dude.
Yeah, which is wild. He's been going a long time.
Yeah. So that's like, to me, that was the idea behind the Texas music scene. It was sort of like, you know, in Nashville, things were slicker. You know, the production was slicker. There were more rules. It was sort of, you know, built around these certain things. And
you had institutions like Music Row and the Opry and things. And you heard, I mean, Cody and those guys were very vocal about that in the 2000s about like, and the culture of cutting outside songs. You see it in that famous Boys from Oklahoma Live thing where I think Randy and Wade and all those guys were involved in that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's the idea behind you know, Texas music is, you know, the concept that you could carve your own path and be your own artist, you know?
Yeah, man. Now, talking about Barstool Therapy, there's a lot of Barstool therapists out in the Texas music scene, man. There are, because there's so many venues and so many scenes where you come up from. So what was it? What led you to that title for this project?
You know, it's kind of interesting because so I have a little creative team, Dave Brainerd. Have you met Dave before?
I don't know if I have.
Dave's here. He's a incredible producer. And Dave and I started working together when I cut Some Old Bar in the 90s. That was 2019 when that came out, if I'm thinking right.
Yeah.
So we've been working together really since 2017. Dave's a great traditional country, just a great producer, you know, end of story. He can produce a lot of stuff. But Dave and I work together very closely, and he's a co-writer in a lot of my stuff. And then Tony Ramey is my other collaborator. So really my record since my stuff since Dos Cortisonas, which is my last full-length record that came out 4 years ago.
Yeah.
What? We've been kind of, really since 2020, everything that I put out is just me, Dave, and Tony. You know, there's not really like a thing that says that I don't write with a bunch of other outside writers. It's just, you know, I know that when Dave and Tony and I get together, you know, I can usually, we might have to drink a lot of tequila, but I can usually convince them of what my creative vision is. Hey,
you have your guys.
I have my guys, you know? And so we do our thing. And, you know, and I think Barstool Therapy was really just, you know, I'm a one liner kind of guy. So, my wife likes to keep track of all my stupid sayings. But I say, hey, I'm going to go meet my buddy Pete for some Barstool Therapy. That is, you know, that was that for 2 years. Like, I'm going to go stop off at the Whip Inn in Austin for some Barstool Therapy. And, you know, just the idea of sitting around and drinking a beer and talking to your buddy. And,
yeah.
And, you know, if you've got something on your mind, I mean, you're going to feel a little bit better. Maybe. Depends on how many cervezas you have. But, you know, so that's really the idea was, you know, Barstool Therapy, just this concept of getting something off your chest and just thinking too about, you know, how nutty our world has gotten in the past 5 years. So dude, I'm like, dude, people need to chill out. You know, so that's where the concept came from. And, you know, me and Dave and Tony got together and we wrote the song like three times. We wrote it and I'm like, it's not it, man. It's not it. And then we wrote it again. No, it's something different. So we chased it for a minute.
Yeah.
Till we found it.
Yeah, dude. Well, it's awesome, man. And you have a wild character depicting the guy in the guy out there in the music videos and stuff as well, dude. So talk about old crazy Uncle Laser.
Uncle Laser. You know, Laser and I actually ran into each other a few years ago at this beer joint out in Spring Branch, Texas. It's a little further west of New Braunfels, and called the Treehouse. And I own Juan Lobo Tequila. I have my own tequila brand. So it gets dangerous, man. You drink too much of your own product. But so we're out there, and I actually had never met Laser. And he told me he was a fan of my music, and I said, okay, man, let's try out this Juan Lobo. So we drank some tequila together, and I started following his career and just what he was doing, and it's really been impressive, just sort of the traction he's getting. And you know, when we put this video idea together, I had this idea about the dance, like I look back on the movie Michael with starring John Travolta.
Yeah.
Where he was an angel, right? Do you remember that movie?
I think so. I think my parents had it on at one point.
So, I'm really feeling old.
No, you're okay.
Yeah. So he did this crazy dance in Green Hall. It was like this, the whole scene was about the dance. And when we started putting this idea together for Barstool Therapy, I was like, man, I want somebody. I'm seeing this dance happen. Like it's down this shotgun bar, and I, for some reason, I just put it in my head that it needed to be Uncle Laser. And my wife was like, are you sure? Do you know Laser well enough to ask him to do this? I'm like, yeah, man, I can call him up. And so it really was pretty loose at first. Like I called Laser, hey man, I got this song called Barstool Therapy. Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to shoot a video for it. Would you want to be in it? It was just kind of really awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds cool. All right. Well, I'll call you back with more details. And so it was really cool how it came together, though. It's actually Mason Dixon directed it. Mason's here in Nashville. Mason and I go way back. He's one of my best friends. Phenomenal, phenomenal film director,
yeah.
Music video director. So, you know, I call Mason and I'm like, hey, I got this idea, Barstool Therapy. I'm a therapist. I prescribe Barstool Therapy for this guy named Uncle Laser. You know, Mason's like, man, hold on, stop right there. Who's Uncle Laser? And, okay, well, he's this guy.
So complete it was really wild card.
Right.
Wild so card, it was, electric human.
But it just really, it gained momentum and the idea came together and the right people came together. Mason just killed it. And Laser, man, he showed up and it was a long day, you know. A
lot of Juan Lobo, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, I had planned on not drinking that day.
You can't not drink for your video Barstool Therapy when Laser's in there.
Well, Laser had me, as soon as I got, first of all, I showed up late to makeup. And so Laser's already sitting in makeup and he's like, hey man, 9:30, baby. You're supposed to be here at 9:30. And so he started cracking beers, I think definitely by 10 a.m. And I'm like, well, this guy can't drink by himself. So that's all I'm going to tell you about behind the scenes of this.
I'm excited. I'm excited for the video to be debuting, man. And Texas has a wild comedy scene too.
Mm-hmm, it does.
And you're somebody that likes to have fun with your music and things like that. So what's it been like being in watching that scene kind of come up? And those guys are fans of country music.
Yeah, yeah. No, it reminds, like I said, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the early days of what you know, what we were doing, you know, in the Texas music scene. I mean, these guys are playing, in some cases they're playing some pretty big clubs, but they're also playing some really small ones. They're selling them out.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of them, you know, and, you know, and and I don't know if it had, and obviously Laser could speak to this a lot more than me, but I don't know if it had, you know, maybe it was sort of ignited by Joe moving in, you know, into Austin. Is that's sort of maybe the beginning of it?
Yeah, that and like, you Kill know? Tony being there and things like that. It just, I remember last time I was in Austin just driving, I was like, oh, comedy club there. Oh, comedy club there. Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah. There's comedy clubs everywhere.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. And it is cool how the music sort of, you know, can, you know, sort of connect on that level too. And so it's, we've gone to see Laser and some, I mean, again, he's doing a great job, and that we've gone to see him. Pretty small clubs are packed and you can feel the energy, and that's where it begins, man.
Yeah.
You know, I feel for those guys.
You're just there by yourself. Yeah, you don't even have a guitar with you. Like, at least when you're starting out acoustic solo, you can rip on the guitar if something goes wrong, you know?
Nada.
You're up there by yourself. Nada. In front of people.
Yeah, you and a long neck, dude, just going for it.
what were some of the early experiences for you, like coming up in the scene of playing those bars and cutting your teeth and doing cover sets? But then when does it transition to you're doing, I know original music's always been a huge thing for you and a huge thing in Texas, but when does that switch kind of flip? Like, take us back to when the wheels really started going for you.
You know, when I first started, so I went to college in Colorado at Colorado State. Of course I grew up in Oklahoma. I go to Colorado State. I I achieve a finance degree somehow. I'm not quite sure. I'm a big outdoors guy, so that's why I wanted to go to Colorado.
And, oh, beautiful out there.
Yeah, and that was kind of a big part of my college experience. Got a job with British Petroleum in Chicago right out of school. I moved to Chicago, and I'd been playing, you know, country music growing up and didn't have any idea how the hell to get into it. You know, when you grow up in Miami, Oklahoma, you know, the town of 10,000 people, you know, Nashville, you know, where the hell's that? You know, how do you get into this? And so that was just something in the back of my mind that maybe I wanted to be a country singer. And so graduating, worked for BP in Chicago, they transferred me to Texas. And you know, that, so I moved to Houston. That's where I really started. And you know, my soundtrack moving to Texas was Pat Green, you know, 3 days, and you're going, holy shit, what is this stuff, man?
Yeah.
You know, wow. And it's, so of course I was a Garth Brooks fan because I grew up on Garth Brooks and George Strait. Then I knew all those guys, you know, playing Waylon songs in college just for my buddies. And, you know, being in school in Colorado, of course, I got to see Chris Ledoux and Cheyenne. I mean,
did you ever make it down to the Grizzly Rose?
Oh yeah.
In Denver?
Yeah.
Because I know Toby was the house band there for a long time. Yeah. That's where the Toby Keith story begins. Like, I would
just,
begins.
In college, I'm just there, you know, who the hell knows who I saw when I would stroll into there, there to drink beer. But, you know, so I moved to Houston, and Houston had this, John Evans, I don't know, do you know John Evans?
I don't. The name rings a little bit of a bell.
John's kind of he's a Texas legend, in my mind. He was really, really close buddies and collaborators with Hayes Carl.
Oh, wow.
And still is.
Yeah.
John actually lives here in town. And so John was like my first guy. I started playing open mic nights in Interloop, Houston. Play this place called K's Lounge. That's where I first met Randy. Ryan Bingham was kicking around at the time, too. Jesse Dayton was a name around Houston. Hayes Carl had just put out his first record down there, and Hayes was like everybody was tripping out over Hayes's, you know, first stuff, and still is. But
yeah.
So I was playing open mic nights there, and met John Evans, and John started kind of working with me a little bit, and he said, "Man, I think I can get you a gig at Blanco's." So Blanco's Bar and Grill, Interloop, Houston. So Houston at the time, and you know, that's the thing about scenes. You can't really predict them.
No,
there's no way to predict them. Be it here in Nashville, be it with, you know, a musical movement or a group of guys or podcasters or comedians. When you find yourself in the scene, you know something special is happening.
Yeah, man.
But you have no idea how it arrived and when it's going to go away, right?
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, so at that time, I'm playing this open mic stuff, Interloop, Houston. I mean, it was way, it obviously, you know, that was 20 years ago. It was not as built up as it is now in a lot of ways. And so John introduced me to Hayes, and Hayes needed a roommate. So I lived with Hayes Carl. And that was weird because I was a huge fan of Hayes.
Yeah.
Huge. It's like I was borderline kind of germ, and now I'm like his roommate. So I'm like sitting in the living room, and I'm, you know, I have nothing to talk about, you know. So how's it going, man? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just really, but I mean, that was short lived. Hayes and I are great, great buddies and became great friends. And, but you know, the first place in Outer Loop, Houston was always known for cover bands. And, you know, there's a good thing to that too, right? Musicians learn to emulate country songs exactly how they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like there's a value to that and learning how to be a great singer,
learning how to perform and be on stage and cut your teeth.
Absolutely. And so Inner Loop was songwriters. And I remember John Lomax, who was the writer for the Houston Press. I had just started, dude. I was way green. You know, he's like, I don't really know what to do with you, John, because like you're traditional country, like you're kind of cut out of the outer loop guys. Like you're sort of in that world, but yet you're writing your own country songs. And so I was just kind of an in-betweener, you know? And so my first gig was Blanco's Bar and Grill. Corey Morrow and Roger Krieger are called Blanco's Babies. I guess they call me a Blanco's baby. It's not around anymore. You know, they bulldozed Blanco's. But I remember John Evans said, I got you a gig at Blanco's. And pays, I think at the time, I want to say that you could make between $1,000 and $2,000.
It's a lot of money back then, man.
Yeah, dude. That's like, a great guarantee. Come on. He's like, do you have, and his question was, do you have 4 hours of music? And I was like, hell yeah, man. You know, and I mean, not even close, really. But you played 9 to 9:45, 10 to 10:45, 11 to 11:45, and 12 to 12:45. And literally it was like you had to be on time, man. Like you get off stage every set and you try to drink as much as you can, right? You go hang with everybody. But, you know, they would, come on, John, get back on stage. And so, you know, you're cutting your teeth on stuff, trying to figure out what people are going to dance to. What do they respond to?
That was the first thing I noticed in Texas. I remember going out there with Muscadine Bloodline 2019. I was selling their hats and t-shirts.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. I'm from New York, but I'm used to like the Southeast touring where it's everybody's in the pit, you know, it's more that style.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait, in between every song, everybody's getting off the dance floor. And if they don't go on the dance floor and start twirling around, then they don't like the song. Like your goal is to get boots on the dance floor.
That's it, dude. 100%. I mean, and that's, you know, you learn what works, what doesn't work. Of course, by the last set, I mean, you're kind of playing stuff you've already played before.
Yeah, because those folks weren't in there, usually have drank themselves home.
Right. And I remember, you know, at the time, I mean, you know, I was on a Waylon Jennings kick, so I was listening to everything Waylon Jennings had put out. You know, I've always been a Merle Haggard guy. So you're kind of, you know, going through all the Merle stuff. And I remember I played the Continental Club one time in downtown Houston, which the Continental Club was really more of an Austin thing. But there was this really hardcore rockabilly traditional country following that went to the Continental Club in downtown Houston. And I played Garth Brooks Much Too Young and almost got my ass kicked out of it.
Wow.
Yeah, they were like, that ain't country, son of a bitch. You know, and you're like, okay, all right, I got it. Much Too Young. I mean, come on. It's like, it's like in my mind, that's like a country classic now.
Yes, yeah.
But that's way, I think, you know, back then it was like, you know, I had guys that come up to me, like anything that's like, you know, post, you know, 19, you know, 81 ain't country kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so... It was a really amazing scene at the time, you know, it really was. And I hope that these young guys can be a part of one of those at some point, be that here or Texas or.
Yeah. I think another hotbed that pops up, and I didn't know you were from Oklahoma originally. Yeah. You think of Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Another. I feel like if there's a venue for kids to come up and play in, like the Tumbleweed in Stillwater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the Blue Light in Lubbock, like the Blue Room in Statesboro, Georgia. Yeah. Or you have to have a spot for these kids to come up and play or people to move and want to play. And it sounds like in Houston you guys had that with Outer Loop and Inner Loop.
For sure, man. And you're right. It's creating an environment where guys feel comfortable. Really. And like, you know, cause I think about, you know, it's kind of crazy to see Parker and Co kind of come up together at the same time and
touring together and sonically couldn't be more different.
Right. Exactly. And they were, you know, and it's like, man, that's cool. How did they find that? You know, and it's the same thing with, you know, I think about the Oklahoma scene. I mean, those guys had an ability to, you know, really get good at what you're going to do. You've got to do it a lot, right? You know, and you got to enjoy it. So, you know, and I think, you know, I used to play the Wormy Dog in Oklahoma City, but it's not the original.
Yeah, it's different now. Yeah, right. I know that it's back, but it's not what it was.
Yeah,
it's a different thing.
So I have heard, are they bringing the Wormy Dog back?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I was there when it was Wormy Dog Oklahoma City. And then, of course, the original one, the Stillwater, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, man. I mean, I think you have to have that. You hope to have that, to have some kind of camaraderie and the ability to have fun doing what you're doing and bounce stuff off your buddies.
Yeah, and it's your buddies coming out to support. Yeah. Which is like the big thing, because you look back to Stillwater. I mean, with Cody and Mike McClure and the Divide, and then it led into Turnpike, and then led into Zach, and led into Wyatt Flores, and now there's a crop of kids coming up. We got to go to Calf Fry this past year.
That's cool.
And I got to experience, like, I'd been to Stillwater on the road before, but I'd never been involved with Calf Fry.
Yeah.
And seeing the 17, 18, 19-year-old kids playing in the Battle of the Bands, I'm like, still have it here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
These could be like the grandchild, like the kids of the Divide, and they're doing it.
Yeah, and I think I am seeing, you do see with the young dudes coming up right now, there's definitely, like, you know, they've got the bug. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you want.
They're down to play shows and get in a van or an SUV, make no money, and play songs with their buddies until it works.
Right.
And they're going to go until they absolutely can't anymore.
Right. And
which is what you need.
Yeah. And I you see it, and you're like, okay, that makes you feel good, you know, because you're like, it's still alive. You know, these dudes their influences are different. But I think the recent sort of surge of, you know, and it kind of hits it. The recent thing, I think, I feel like, and I'm probably completely wrong, and people are going to go, man, I saw that interview with John Wolfe. He was full of shit, man. And, but it's like, you know, I think about, you know, sort of Parker and of course the explosion of Zach Bryan, and those guys are like, that's very non-formula. It's very much get a guitar and write about things that you feel.
Yeah.
And then there's an avenue to make it popular or to at least get it out there. Right.
Yeah.
And so then, so you go, okay, wow. I think that opened up a huge sort of door, and Wyatt was, you know, he's coming in there a little bit behind those guys, but it's like all of a sudden these guys, okay, well, there's a possibility, you know, of doing something that's my own music, and you know, that I can get it out there and I can do something with it. The creativity is really, you know, when I came up, especially because I'm a traditional country guy.
Yeah.
You know, I always felt like traditional country guys, we sort of have these self-imposed rules on us. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and it's because that's we're holding down the, you know, I always felt like the rock genre, just everything was wide open in terms of what you wanted to do. There's no rules. You know, you make with traditional guys, you know, it's like we have these boundaries. We want it to sound, live in a certain world.
Pedal steel, fiddle, piano, sonically it's in a box.
Right. Sonically it's in a box. And, you know, and again, that's really cool. But then also how is it, it's difficult at times to sort of carve out your sound.
Yeah.
You know, and for a long time, I think so many dudes went through this, and I feel like it really impacted my career on, you know, really not a good way early in my career. Everybody wants to be George Strait, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of funny because, you know, most artists in traditional country are that way. Like, you look back, like I read, you know, have been read some stories about Merle Haggard. He was like such a huge Lefty Frizzell fan, and I think he like temporarily went crazy and thought he was Lefty for a while. Have you heard any of this stuff?
No. I knew that there was a Lefty connection in there, but yeah. I never heard that he had like that moment of identity crisis.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like built in our DNA. Like we, you know, I mean, everybody, I mean, Garth talks about just wanting to be George Strait, man. Yeah. It's just like, man, I just want to be George. And I, you know, I kind of, you know, early on, I played a private New Year's party for George Strait when I first started.
That had to be one of the bigger oh shit moments, especially early in your career.
It was crazy, you know. And so his nephew, Trey, and I moved to town together here to Nashville. I slept. He had an office. I think it's Jamie Johnson's office now. I don't know, or at least Jamie had one for a minute over there. And I think it was Chet Atkins' old office, and Trey Strait had that office, and we came to town in 2006, dude. And I slept on the couch in Trey's office, and we were in Nashville, baby. We made it.
Man. You know? I was a couch sleeper for a while when I first got down here, dog. Yeah. Everybody goes through it.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of it.
We were Trey Strait was my manager, and he said, "Hey, we're gonna go to Uncle George's New Year's Eve party in San Antonio, outside of San Antonio." And, okay, cool, man. I get to meet George Strait. This is cool.
I'm just happy to be there.
Yeah. And the guy that was booked to play the party got sick and had to cancel. So, dude, my band loaded up. We loaded our van up and our little trailer and went and set up and played George Strait's New Year's party. Like, this was 2005, 2006.
Wow.
Yeah. And George was super cool, man. As I've been around him a handful of times, and he was, you know, he's like Sinatra to me. Just like, yeah. He's the real deal. The story that comes along with that is, you know, we had a long night, played a lot of songs, and we'd play for an hour and take a break or whatever. I said, "George, hey man, I like to cover Unwound. You mind if I cover Unwound?" And he's like, "No, not a problem, John. Sing whatever you want to sing." And I said, "Man, it'd be really great if you could get up and sing it with me." And he put his hand on my shoulder and he goes, "John, I stopped working on New Year's a long time ago." True story. True story,
what a
dude.
Badass thing for a legend to say.
Straight just dissed me to no level, dude. I couldn't be happier. It was like, fair enough.
Doesn't hurt to shoot your shot, though.
Hey, man, fair enough. All right, got you, dude. So yeah, we played it, man, but it was cool, dude. It was just a memory, you know. It's like you don't know what's at the time that felt so huge, and I thought, you know, the Grand Ole Opry's got to be calling tomorrow, you know, that kind of thing. But it just became a part of my history. And it's so cool, man, to look back on that. And I've since sung in front of George a handful of times, and it's never gotten any easier. But he's a great dude. And he's like, it's like people say you don't want to meet your heroes. And in my case, it was completely different. Like, George is just like so cool. Like, I'm like, how can I? But see, that doesn't encourage you to be yourself. When you realize he's that cool, you're like, how can I be more like George? And you think, no, wait, I got to be myself.
You got to be your own version of that. Just like he was his own version of that. He wasn't trying to be anybody else.
Yeah.
That's why he's a legend.
Yeah, even Parker's talked about it. You know, like he wants to be like George off the stage. And that was a big influence on me too. How can I sort of be influenced by the way he's handled himself. And, you know, so far I haven't gotten into any online fights or, you know, there's no arrest videos, you know, knock on wood.
Yeah, man. So how would you say things have transitioned to the era that you're in now with putting out this new project and still playing shows and doing it and kind of this next chapter that we're embarking on here?
You know, it's interesting because you have to really, you gotta be flexible. You have to sort of, look at things and go, okay, how can I fit in? You know, I guess that's a start. How can I embrace this new process of releasing music? And, yeah, you know, and so I think I feel like if you, I don't know, in my case, it's, I think fighting the sort of new way of doing things and the social media interaction, I don't know that that's going to do you any good. So for me, I've had to kind of relearn some things. I've also found, you know, that the same thing still applies though. You've got to, the creative process has to be something that you're passionate about. You know, you have to. So, you know, you kind of go into this mode of, and I think, you know, we've been talking about this recently too, my wife and I've talked about it and some of my team members, is just like, you know, I don't want to be kind of a chase streams or chase, what impressions and like be a stream chaser or whatever. That's a new coin phrase.
Okay.
But it's like, yeah. I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to make music for the sake of like hoping that it's going to go viral, so to speak. Cause I just don't know that you can, I just don't know that that's going to lead you into a good place. So I think you have to, like, the idea is if you love it and you're passionate about it, you got to dig in and make something great.
And you've been building a fan base for two decades now.
Yeah.
Your fans know, yeah, what a John Wolfe song is, and they've stuck with you for a long time, and you know what those people are going to want and what people like that are going to want. And new people are going to discover it, man.
Yeah.
Music discovery process is there, man. Best song wins. You put out stuff that you're proud of.
Dude, so dig in and then when it comes to promoting it, embrace it and learn.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I'm at. Cause I feel like in a lot of ways I'm, you know, sort of, I'm a newbie, cause I'm just not as, you know, Braxton Keith is one of my buddies.
Yeah.
And Braxton's so good with, and you know, and he's talked to me about this stuff, and Braxton's came up doing a lot of shows with me. And I feel like the old guy, like, hey man, how do you do those reels like that, bro? That's cool, man. He's like, oh, it's just like this, you know? So you have to, again, you have to sort of, you know, just say, okay, man, I'm going to try to learn something new or be more active. And really it's really just, you know, trying to engage with your fans. And so that's what we're doing with this record. And it does feel, in many ways, like we're learning something new.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's got to be exciting though.
Like, it is.
And yeah, you said your last project was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how it was you would wait a couple, you'd put out a record.
Yeah.
And then it might go to radio, it might not. And then you'd tour that thing.
Yeah.
And then in the process, you'd find the time to write new songs. And a few years later, sometimes 4 years later, you'd put out the next record.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's like you drop a record. Some people drop in 60 songs on a damn record. And then putting out a song a couple weeks later. It's nuts.
Oh, for sure, man. And I think it's a really fluid process now. And I think it does matter to stay consistent, you know. And I think even back in the day, it was like a record every 2 years, sort of how they used to look at it. Got to make sure you put out an album every 2 years. That's changed even you know more, but you know, I think the distance between my last record and this one, I had spent a lot of years on the road, and you know, my wife and I have a great new place in New Braunfels, and I wanted to kind of spend some time working on the house and taking some time just for myself. And but it does, again, if you, that's totally up to you as an artist, right? If you want to like take a little time to do something, but you are going to be left in the dust a little bit. You're going, okay, what the hell's going on now? You know,
I do think it's important to take time off, though. One for yourself, your personal life. Do all that. Like, do what you got to do. It's important to live more life. You're going to get more songs the more life that you live. And also, if you're hitting the same markets on like a yearly basis, if you space that out a little bit, that demand on the tickets is going to get there, man.
For
sure. I'm sure you've seen that.
For sure, man. And I think it's, you know, it's been a bit of a transition, and you know, we're excited to 2026. I think is going to be a big touring year for us, and there's more music coming. So, you know, Barstool Therapy Session One alludes to maybe something else. So there's more announcements coming early next year.
It's exciting, man. You got that great Billy Bob's hat on, and I've only had the pleasure of going out there once, and it was again BC before COVID.
Yeah,
and I still think about just how special that place is. And I've been to all kinds of clubs and festivals and different, taking the music in so many different places.
Yeah.
But there's only one Billy Bob's. Talk about how important a place like that is to you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think Billy Bob's is, you know, when you look at Texas, it's like, I sort of think about the Triple Crown in a way. It's like, you know, Green Hall, Billy Bob's, and Flores Country Store.
Yeah.
In my mind, I've been lucky enough to have a live album from all of those venues. We released live at Billy Bob's earlier this year. Okay. Yeah. So, but you know, number one, it's kind of, in many ways, it's sort of a cornerstone, you know. It's, it's intimidating. It's a big place.
Yes.
You know, it's legendary. That just everything's bigger than life in there. You know, I think it holds 5,000 or 6,000 people. That just the stage feels big. You know, Robert Gallagher has been with Billy Bob's for a really long time. Robert is sort of, he's sort of the, I guess they title him as artist relations, but it's like Gallagher is Billy Bob's in a lot of ways. So there's a process to showing up there. There's a mental place you have to get to play this show. Like no matter what, it just feels big, you know, it's just a thing. And so, for me, I was one of the guys that started off on the honky tonk stage. I don't even know if they do that anymore, but
that's that front stage, right?
The front stage, man, on Thursday nights. So, you know, you get a shot to go do that. I bet I played the honky tonk stage, you know, 3 or 4 times before I got my chance to play the main stage. And so it really is a, you know, when I go to Billy Bob's, it's like coming home to me. You know, seeing people that like Gallagher and Marty and everybody that runs Billy Bob's, it's like, hey man, how you doing, dude? Good to see you. You know, how's your family doing? You know, it's really kind of, so you just really hope those places, you know, just you want them to be around forever. You know, and that's the same way with Green Hall and Floors, handful of others, and it's such a big part of this scene that you hope and pray that it stays like it is, you know, to the end of time. There's no doubt, man.
Yeah, dude, I think it will.
I think so too.
I really do.
Yeah.
You know, it's a special spot, man. So you were alluding to more stuff in the tank as far as music. What are some things that we're looking forward to? As it's crazy, 25's almost over. We're getting into 2026.
I know.
It's wild how time flies.
When we got into, you know, we're really really proud of Barstool Therapy Session One. It's got 8 sides. We've released 3 as singles. So the stuff that's on it, the other five sides we're going to tease a lot of this stuff in the coming weeks leading up to November 7th, because that's around the corner.
Yep.
As you get into these album releases, you realize, like, I mean, the groundwork you have to lay is so different, like we were talking about. And so, you know, I feel like that, and I saw, like, you know, Luke Combs just released 3 or 4 sides called The Prequel.
Yep.
Right. So even guys at the pinnacle of the genre, you're putting out, you have to lay the groundwork, you know? So I feel like as, you know, as we release Barstool Therapy Session 1, there's going to be sides that people haven't even really dug into yet.
Yeah.
You know, and then going into next year, we have a pretty big, a big release scheduled for next year, including the record being printed on vinyl.
Hell yeah.
And a lot more sides. Another big collaboration between me and a Texas legend. That's all I can tell you.
Okay.
And it's not George awesome. Strait. But it's at that level, in my opinion. So so there's some great stuff coming. So we're really excited about it.
That's awesome, man. What's something that you would tell that kid 20 years ago that's living on Trey Straits, sleeping on the couch and coming out here embarking on the Nashville chapter of your story now, knowing what you know now, 2 decades later?
Slow down. Slow down, dude. That's really, I think about it. And, you know, I think it's really easy for artists to everybody, you know, my old manager Lex used to tell me, you know, artists are never happy. You know, it's kind of like built into our DNA. We're always striving for the next thing.
Yeah.
And along the way, you're sometimes you're going to just rush a moment, you know, or a scene, right? Like we're talking about scenes.
Yeah.
Like, dude, if all of us that were in that scene, we all wanted to, like, you know, grow up and move on. But it's like, dude, those things are amazing at the time.
Yeah, that's like what we get to do with Raised Rowdy, with the events that we do and just kind of being there. And I'm about to hit 7 years of being here.
Congrats,
and
it's
like,
dude.
I thank you. And I've seen the multiple scenes of like the guys and girls that are at the top of the genre now.
Yeah.
I remember when they were playing the Writers' Nights playing the Whiskey Jams and playing what would be our Wednesday full bands that we do now, our Rowdy on the Rose over at Odie's. And it is special, man. You got to enjoy it while you're in it.
You have to.
They don't happen very often. That's what makes them special.
They don't. And that's what I'll look back on. I just think, you know, I just slow it down, take it in, enjoy it. I know it's important to grow, right? So you want to grow, but man, it's going to come, you know, and you'll miss those days where, you know, you're riding around in a van and trailer.
Dude, yeah, man. I tell people, those were some of my favorite times when you're just in it with your boys.
Yeah.
You got 10 hours to go to the next gig and you're just doing it.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. You know, they go by fast, man. You know, you can, you know, quickly look back and go, hey, you know, I remember, you know, trying to get to the place where I could buy a tour bus. And Kevin Fowler, always, Kevin's like
another legend,
dude. One of my best friends. And Fowler was, he's always like, John Boy, don't buy a tour bus. Don't buy a tour bus, John Boy. You don't want a tour bus, you know? And I'm like, oh, all I want is a tour bus, you know? I've owned my bus for 6 years and I'm like, I don't want a tour bus. To hell with this thing, man. Is there anything that doesn't break down? You know? So it's just all those little things along the way, man. That's really that's the journey. That's the story. It's really not, you know, it's really not the levels that you get to or the money you make or don't make. It's the thing that you're trying to rush through sometimes. That's the thing, dude.
Yeah, and that's something that I feel like social media has changed, is guys and girls rise up so quick that they kind of skip those steps.
Yeah.
But I love that some artists are still, they know that they can sell X amount of tickets, but it's like, go and play the Georgia Theater, go and play Floors.
Yeah.
And if you sell out the one night, book a second night, like it's important to go through and play those clubs and give you for the artists and the band guys and the team to have that experience, but for the fans to have that experience and get to see you in a club setting. So it's much more special when you're in an arena or a huge, massive room.
There's no doubt. And I think, like I said, that there's so many good things about, you know, what's happening in the scene, the ability to be creative, to be your own artist, to think outside the box, to do stuff outside the box. We're seeing that all the time.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, you know, some of these guys grow super duper fast, and you know, you just hope that you know, at the same time, when I was riding around in that van and trailer, I'd be like, man, I wouldn't wish this damn stuff on my worst enemy. You know what I mean? Because you're kind of crammed in the back or whatever. Yeah. But like you said, it comes with both sides of that. That's such a great time. But, you know, sometimes you find yourself going, dude, this is rough. And some of those guys get to skip some of that. You just hope that they, you know, can put it into perspective and just, you know, grow their career on a sort of a long-term approach.
Yeah, man. You know? It builds the foundation.
Yeah, for sure.
And just like you were talking about with session one of Barstool Therapy,
yeah.
That's building the foundation of this record. And I can't wait for the full thing, what's going to be coming, man. And thank you so much for coming here and hanging.
Thanks for having me, brother.
We'll see you at Odie's a little bit later, man.
I'm
excited to be there for this video premiere in Midtown. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, get ready for Uncle Laser.
Oh, boy. You know what? You know how they serve cocktails at Odie's? They serve them in buckets.
Oh, no.
Like buckets. Oh, so it's no. They say you get bucked up. So I think I'm glad I'm sober. I'm glad you're taking your thing because we can sit there and watch everybody wearing those goggles, man. Drinking that Juan Lobo.
Yeah,
it's going to be a time.
Yeah, you got to watch out. I think Laser's been prepping all day, so I'm sure he'll show up in rare form.
Oh, I can't wait. We've interacted online a little bit, but I've never formally met him. So
he's wild.
I'm very excited.
He's a super good dude, and he's a big talent, and he's got a big heart. He's a hard worker, and he's also a pretty wild guy, so you'll get a few laughs in, that's for sure.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it. Well, thank you so much for coming on here and hanging with us. Y'all be sure to check out Barstool Therapy session 1. Be on the lookout for what's coming. Hit that follow button on all the damn social media channels, on Spotify, Apple Music. Be on the lookout, and we got some shows to close out the year too, right?
Yeah, man.
Heading out to Colorado, it looks like. Heading out Rio Frio and Edinburgh, so bouncing around, going to Warehouse 2565. That's my buddy Butch out there.
Yeah, we got a little Colorado run in November. Hopefully it doesn't snow on us.
Dude, that's the risk. You go out there, aside from like 3 months out of the year, which is like June, July, August, you never know what you're going to get going through the pass, man. But y'all be sure to get your tickets if you're out in Texas, out in Colorado. You can find all that info on the website. And like I said, Barstool Therapy session 1. Go check it out. Also, shout out to our friends from Surfside. No bubbles, no troubles. It ain't a seltzer. It's a Surfside. Vodka lemonade, vodka iced tea, vodka green tea. They are everywhere. Go and check out our friends at Surfside. And for more on us, visit RaiseRowdy.com. From man John Wolf, I'm Matt Barilla. This has been Outside the Round.
I ain't never been the kind for staying one place for too long. I ain't never been the best at saying I love you to a girl I love. Only got a couple tricks up my sleeve. They usually just make them leave. So if you know me, if you really know me, you know